शलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासुदेव गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय श्रील गौर श्रील गुरुदेव की जय गौर भक्तवृन्द की जय गौर प्रेमानंदी हरि हरि बोल। Okay, Avadhoot came. Govinda Nandini still hasn't been able to get in. Sunil, can you hear? Are you able to hear everything? Sunil, can you hear us? Yes, okay. If you want to speak, then you have to press the button on the top. It says start broadcasting. That'll allow you to speak. Okay, if you like to speak, you can just press that start broadcasting. You'll see a blue button up on the upper left-hand side. And you press that, and then you're able to speak. But we will request everyone to mute their microphones until stop broadcasting, until so that one person can read at a time. And we'll ask Mati to start reading. First I'll read the Sanskrit, then she can read the translation and purport. The Sanskrit says Sapari Jachu Krum Makayam Avarnam Asnaviram Sudam Asnaviram Sudam Apapa Vidam Kavir Manishi Paribu Swayumbur Yatata Yato Ratan Vyadadach Jasvati Vyaksamabhyaha. And the synonyms, Saha, that person, Pariyajat, must know in fact, Sukram, the omnipotent, Akayam, unembodied, Avranam, without reproach, Asnaviram, without vain, Sudham, antiseptic, Apapaviram, prophylactic, Kavihi, omniscient, Manasi, philosopher, Paribuhu, the greatest of all, Swayambuhu, self-sufficient, Yata, Tata, Yata, just in pursuance of, Atan, desirables, Vyadadat, awards, Shashvatibhya, immemorial, Samabhya, time. All right, Mati, would you like to read the translation and purport?
Yes, Maharaj. Translation. Thank you. Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond approach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. Purport. Here is a description of the transcendental and eternal form of the absolute truth, absolute personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord is not formless. He has his own transcendental form, which is not at all similar to the forms of the mundane world. The forms of the living entity in this world are embodied in material nature, and they work like any material machine. The autonomy of a material body must have a mechanical construction with veins and so forth. But the transcendental body of the Supreme Lord has nothing like veins. It is clearly stated here that he is unembodied, which means that there is no difference between his body and his soul, nor is he forced to accept a body according to the laws of nature as we are. In materially conditioned life, the soul is different from the gross embodiment and subtle mind. For the Supreme Lord, however, there is never any such difference between him and his body and mind. He is the complete whole, and his mind, body, and he himself are all one and the same. In the Brahma Samhita 5.1, there is a similar description of the Supreme Lord. He is described there as Sakshidananda Vigraha, which means that he is the eternal form fully representing transcendental existence, knowledge, and bliss. As such, he does not require a separate body or mind, as we do in material existence. The Vedic literature clearly states that the Lord's transcendental body is completely different from ours. Thus, he is sometimes described as formless. This means that he has no form like ours, and that he is devoid of a form we can conceive of. In the Brahma Samhita 5.32, it is further stated that with each and every part of his body, he can do the work of the other senses. This means that the Lord can walk with his hands, accept things with his legs, see with his hands and feet, eat with his eyes, etc. In the Shruti mantras, it is also said that although the Lord has no hands and legs like ours, he has a different type of hands and legs by which he can accept all that we offer him and run faster than anyone. These points are confirmed in this eighth mantra through the use of words like Sukram, omnipotent. The Lord's worshipful form, Archa Vigraha, which is installed in temples by authorized acharyas who have realized the Lord in terms of Mantra 7, is none different from the original form of the Lord. The Lord's original form is that of Sri Krishna, and Sri Krishna expands himself into an unlimited number of forms, such as Baladeva, Rama, Nrisimha, and Varaha. All of these forms are one and the same personality of Godhead. Similarly, the Acharya Vigraha worship in temples is also an expanded form of the Lord. By worshipping the Acharya Vigraha, one can at once approach the Lord, who accepts the service of the devotees by his omnipotent energy. The Archa Vigraha
means worshipable form. Archa Vigraha means worshipable form.
Archa Vigraha of the Lord descends at the request of the Acharyas, the holy teachers, and works exactly in the original way of the Lord by virtue of the Lord's omnipotence. Foolish people who have no knowledge of Sri Ishanapad or any of the other Shruti mantras consider the Archa Vigraha, which is worshipped by the pure devotees, to be made of material elements. This form may be seen as material by the imperfect eyes of foolish people or Kanishta Adhikaris. But such people do not know that the Lord, being omnipotent and omniscient, can transform matter into spirit and spirit into matter as he desires. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.11 and 12, the Lord regrets the fallen condition of men with little knowledge who deride him because he transcends like a man into this world. Such poorly informed persons do not know the omnipresence of the Lord. Thus the Lord does not manifest himself in full to the material spectators. He can be appreciated only in proportion to one's surrender to him. The falling condition of the living entities is due entirely to forgetfulness of the relationship with the Lord, with God. In this mantra, as well as in many other Vedic mantras, it is clearly stated that the Lord has been supplying goods to the living entities from time immemorial. The living being desires nothing, and the Lord supplies the object of that desire in proportion to one's qualification. If a man wants to be a high court judge, he must acquire not only the necessary qualification but also the consent of the authority who can award the title of High Court Judge. The qualifications in them are insufficient for one to occupy the post. It must be awarded by some superior authority. Similarly, Lord awards enjoyment to living entities in proportion to their qualification. But good qualification in themselves are not sufficient to enable one to receive award. The mercy of the Lord is also required. Ordinarily, the living being does not know what to ask from the Lord, nor which post to seek. When the living being comes to know the constitutional position. However, he has to be accepted into the Transcendental Association of the Lord in order to render transcendental loving service unto him. Unfortunately, living beings under the influence of material nature ask for many other things, and they are described in the Bhagavad Gita 2.41 as having divided or splayed intelligence. Spiritual intelligence is one, but mundane intelligence is diverse. In Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.30-31, it is stated that those who are captivated by the temporary beauties of the external energy forget the real aim of life, which is to go back to Godhead. Forgetting this, one tries to adjust things by various plans and programs. But this is like chewing what has already been chewed. Nonetheless, the Lord is so kind that he allows the forgetful living entity to continue in this without interference. Thus this mantra of Sri Ishanapad uses the very appropriate word yata tat yata, indicating that the Lord rewards the living entities just in pursuance of their desire. If a living being wants to go to hell, the Lord allows him to do so without interference. And if he wants to go back home, back to Godhead, the Lord helps him. God is described here in as Paribhuha, the greatest of all. No one is greater than or equal to him. Other living beings are described here as beggars who ask goods from the Lord. The Lord supplies the things the living entity desire. If the entities were equal to the Lord in potency, if they were omnipotent or omniscient, there would be no question of their begging from the Lord, even for so-called liberation. Real liberation means going back to Godhead. Liberation as conceived of by an impersonalist is a myth, and begging for sense gratification has to continue eternally unless the beggar comes to his spiritual senses and realizes his constitutional position. Only the Supreme Lord is self-sufficient. When Lord Krishna appeared on earth 5,000 years ago, he displayed his full manifestation as the personality of Godhead through his various activities. In his childhood, he killed many powerful demons such as Agasusa Sura, Bakasura, and Sakatasura, and there are no question of his having acquired such power through any extraneous endeavors. He lifted the Govardhan hill without ever practicing weightlifting. He danced with the gopis without social restriction and without reproach. Although the gopis approached him with a paramour's feelings of love, the relationship between the gopis and Lord Krishna were worshipped even by Lord Chaitanya, who was a strict sannyasi and rigid follower of the disciplinary regulations. To confirm that the Lord is always pure and uncontaminated, Sri Ishanapad describe him as Sudham, antiseptic, and prophylactic. He's antiseptic in the sense that even an impure thing can become purified just by touching him. The word prophylactic refers to the power of his association. As mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita 9.30-31, a devotee may appear to be too Duratkara, not well behaved in the beginning, but he should be accepted as pure because he is on the right path. This is due to the prophylactic nature of the Lord's association. The Lord is also apapa vidham because sin cannot touch him. Even if he acts in a way that appears to be sinful, such actions are all good, for there is no question of his being affected by sin, because in all circumstances he is Sudham, most purified. He is often compared to the sun. The sun extracts moisture from many untouchable places on the earth, yet it remains pure. In fact, it purifies obnoxious things by virtue of its sterilizing powers. If the sun, which is a material object, is so pure, then we can hardly begin to imagine the purifying strength of the all-powerful Lord.
Okay, thank you. Very good. So Srila Prabhupada mentions a very nice point here. Even one may be qualified one may be qualified to be, say, a Supreme Court justice. This is not enough to be a Supreme Court justice. One has to be accepted by the Supreme Court justices that, yes, you are able to become a justice on the Supreme Court. And they have to give their sanction. Of course, in the U.S., it's something like the Congress has to give their sanction. But anyhow, the idea is there. And it's simply qualification. Even that is not enough to get a position, even on the material platform. Some acknowledgement from those who are in some position, that is also required. So Prabhupada uses that to explain how mercy of the Lord, a mercy of the higher agents of the Lord, that is required to gain entrance into the higher position. Not simply one can think, I will become qualified and therefore gain that position. Always a personal personal relationship is required in spiritual life. Personal transaction. Because the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal, we should not misunderstand that and think only in terms of some knowledge of God or of some good behavior on our part. Actually getting the mercy of the Lord, the mercy of the Lord's devotees, is all in all. If we can get that, then even knowledge is so and so forth, even knowledge, even good qualities, all of that is unimportant. If somehow or other we can get the mercy of the Lord, Lord's devotees, automatically, once that happens, we will become purified. Not at first we have to become purified. First we have to get their mercy. Then, somehow or other, by their influence, we will become purified. If we are sincere to maintain that connection. So any questions, comments on that verse? Very beautiful verse in Ishopanishad. Anyone have anything to say? And the Nandini never got in. Jonathan, maybe you can try to contact her via Skype and see if she likes to, if she can hear through your connection on Skype. Oh, it's just entered. Jonathan, were you able to contact her? Oh, is that Govinda Nandini? Govinda 108? Maybe that is her. Govinda Nandini, is that you? Govinda 108. Jai. Okay. Very good. We were just thinking of you and what problem you were having. Okay. Very nice. All right. Very good. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Mataji. Happy birthday. We hope you have a very nice day today. Haribol. Have a nice prasad.
Thank you, everyone. Hare Krishna.
Haribol. Okay, if there's no questions or comments, then we go on to the next verse. As usual, Upanishad, verse 8.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bhava, Ravadut Prabhu. Would you like to read?
I want
you have a question or what?
Yeah,
yes?
I wanted to ask one question. Maybe you already said something about it, but I'm not sure. It was in Ramanuja's Bhagavad Gita commentary, a sentence which is, this is a homogeneous reflection of nebulosity substratum existing as a geometrical reflection of the nebula within the Supreme Being. It's quite complicated thing. I don't understand what is the nebulosity substratum within God.
The logical substratum?
Nebulosity substratum within the Supreme Being.
Nebulosic substratum. Nebulous generally means something that is indeterminate, that has no clear meaning. Has no clear distinction in it. So if it says nebulous substratum, it seems like it may be referring to the impersonal Brahman, my guess would be. And what does the rest of it say? The reflection. I think we lost contact with you. I can't hear you anymore. Your microphone is not connected anymore, Prabhu.
I can get the text in your Skype because here only a few.
Okay, no, you can tell me again. Now I can hear you.
I will give the part of the text in the Skype because here I had to plug in hundreds of times.
Oh, no, you can just say it. You can just
say
it.
I can read out. The Mahat or primal manifestation revolves back into Avyakta, the unmanifest. Avyakta manifests into Akshara, the supra-subtle invariable substance. Akshara devolves into Tamas, the primordial undifferentiated basic substratum of original Prakriti, which is complete darkness. This is a homogeneous reflection of nebulosity substratum, existing as a diametrical reflection of the nebula within the Supreme Being.
Huh. And what is it that you don't understand?
Well, I would like to know what is that nebulosity substratum within.
Yes, so nebulosity substratum. I think whoever has translated this is using a very fanciful expression. I don't know what the exact word is that they're translating, but it seems very fanciful. Because proper English would not speak like that. It would not make a construction like that. There's no such thing as a nebulosity substratum. Substratum of nebulosity, maybe. But this is not a correct English construction, a properly constructed English sentence. If it's a nebulous substratum, then we can say something about it. But nebulosity substratum doesn't make any sense in English. So I would look more to the original Sanskrit to find out exactly what is being said there than to rely on his translation. Where does this come from?
This is on the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, you said Ramanuja's,
Ramanuja's
commentary?
Yeah.
On what verse?
7, 6.
Which one?
Chapter 7.
7 verse 6.
Yeah.
I'll have to look that up, Prabhu, and find out for you, okay, if I could get any further information on that.
In the Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya 376 of Srimad Ananda Tirtha, he say that chakra resembling the blue color of the inner orb of sun represents Durga of Tamas. Shankha being purely white represents Shri of Sattva. Tadma being red represents Bhudevi of Rajas. So here the interesting thing is that, what I also don't understand, is the inner orb of sun blue? Or because she say like chakra resembling the blue color of inner orb of the sun represents Durga of Tamas. That would mean that the inner orb of sun is blue, but how is that?
Well, if the inner orb of the sun, I would imagine, means the actual sun globe itself. And there we find that there is basically fire. Body of the sun, the sun globe itself is made of fire. And fire seems to have all colors of the rainbow. Right? You'll find in fire the red, blue, yellow, orange. And sometimes, if you work with a fire, with a flame, you'll see that they can produce different colors. The cooler part of the flame will be blue, and the hotter part will be red or orange. Intermediate levels will be different colors like that. So you'll find all the colors within the flame, according to whether it is hotter or cooler. Is that your question?
Yes.
What else? Other things?
Mantra 8 says that the Lord is the self-sufficient philosopher.
Yes.
And then the scientists pose singularity as the cause of everything. Now, to put a self-sufficient philosopher as the origin of everything also requires a big leap of faith. So, how to get that faith?
Well, we have to think. If I can be a philosopher, and so many other people can be philosophers, how is it possible? From what source is this capability coming from? From what is it about me or any of these others? What is it? What is that capacity? What is that potential that I am drawing from to be a philosopher, or for anyone to be a philosopher? That potential, that capacity must exist in order for me to become that. So what is that source? What is that capacity from which I am drawing my ability? Or anyone is drawing their ability? And then, if that source must at least have all those capabilities itself, otherwise how I can have them? So in that way, we have to understand that the source of our capabilities, the potential from which our capabilities are being drawn, it must be at least as competent and more so. We can't think that things just come about by accident somehow or other. One becomes a scientist, one becomes a philosopher by some chance. Then chance is capable of so many things, if that's the case. Chance becomes God. By chance we become a philosopher, by chance we become a scientist. By chance we know this, by chance we know that. So chance becomes the all-powerful, all-potential source of everything. What chance doesn't produce anything like that? By accident, nothing wonderful happens. The only thing that accident produces is destruction. When there's an accident, something gets destroyed. We don't think an accident has produced a beautiful building. Accidents don't produce a safe ride home. Just the opposite. So by accident, things like that don't happen. So by what source are these things occurring? Are these things arising in the world? So much intelligence, so much understanding, scientific knowledge, philosophical penetration of truth. That must be coming from an intelligent source. And therefore we have to recognize that and not think it is simply my good fortune. By some accident I have become able to understand something, or some great scientist has been able to understand something by pure accident. And that way it is not just a matter of faith. It's a matter of reason and understanding also. Although we can't understand how that great source of all scientists and all philosophers can be himself a scientist and philosopher, we may not be able to understand what type of great scientist or philosopher that original source may be. Still, we must admit that such a thing is the only way that is possible for any other lesser scientist or philosopher to ever exist. It is the only possible way. So some degree of faith and some degree of reason is required. That's all. That would be my answer. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Prabhu. All right. Let's read one more verse from the Ishopanishad. Ishopanishad, verse 9. Andantamaha pravishanti ye vidamu pashyute tato bhuya ivate tamo ya uvidyayam rattaha. Adam andam, gross ignorance, tamaha, darkness, pravishanti, enter into, ye those who avidyam, nescience, upashyute, worship, tataha, that Then that Buyaha still more Eva like Te De Tamaha darkness, yea those who also Vidyayam in the culture of knowledge, Rataha engaged, translation. Those who engage in the culture of Neshan activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. So let's see. Who would like to read the purport? Avadut, would you like to read the purport? Avadhut, we can't hear you.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, Krishna. That's better. Go ahead, now we can hear.
This mantra offers a comparative study of vidya and avidya. Avidya or ignorance is undoubtedly dangerous, but avidya or knowledge is even more dangerous when mistaken or misguided. This mantra of Sri Upanishad is more applicable today than at any time in the past. Modern civilization has advanced considerably in the field of mass education, but the result is that people are more unhappy than ever before because of the stress placed on material advancement to the exclusion of the most important part of life, the spiritual aspect. As far as vidya is concerned, the first mantra has explained very clearly that the Supreme Lord is the proprietor of everything and that forgetfulness of this fact is ignorance. The more a man forgets this fact of life, the more he is in darkness. In view of this godly civilization directed toward the so-called advancement of education is more dangerous than a civilization in which the masses of people are less educated. Of the different classes of men, karmis, jnanis and yogis, the karmis are those who are engaged in the activities of sense gratification. In the modern civilization, 99.9% of the people are engaged in the activities of sense gratification under the flags of industrialism, economic development, altruism, political activities, activism, and so on. All these activities are more or less based on satisfaction of the senses to the exclusion of the kind of God consciousness described in the first mantra. In the language of the Bhagavad Gita, people who are engaged in gross sense gratification are mudas, asses. The ass is a symbol of stupidity. Those who simply engage in the profitless pursuit of sense gratification are worshipping avidya, according to Sri Upanishad. And those who play the role of helping this sort of civilization in the name of educational advancement are actually doing more harm than those who are on the platform of gross sense gratification. The advancement of learning by a godless people is as dangerous as a valuable jewel on the hood of a cobra. A cobra decorated with a valuable jewel is more dangerous than one not decorated. In the Haribhakti Sudhodaya, the advancement of education by a godless people is compared to decorations on a dead body. In India, as in many other countries, some people follow the custom of leading a procession with a decorated dead body for the pleasure of the lamenting relatives. In the same way, modern civilization is a patchwork of activities meant to cover the perpetual miseries of material. material existence. All such activities are aimed toward sense gratification, but above the senses is the mind, and above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. Thus the aim of real education should be self-realization, realization of the spiritual values of the soul. Any education which does not lead to such a realization must be considered avidya or nations. And to culture such nations means to go down to darkness region, to the darkest region of ignorance. According to the Bhagavad Gita, mistaken mundane education are known as Veda Vadarata and Maya Apahrita Dhyana. They may also be atheistic demons, the lowest of man. Those who are Veda Vadarata pose themselves as very learned in the Vedic literature, but unfortunately they are completely diverted from the purpose. They are completely diverted from the purpose of the Vedas. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the purpose of the Vedas is to know the personality of Godhead, but these Veda Vadarata men are not at all interested in the personality of Godhead. On the contrary, they are fascinated by such fruitive results as the attainment of heaven. As stated in the mantra 1, we should know the personality of Godhead is the proprietor of everything and that we must be satisfied with our allotted portions of necessities of life. The purpose of all Vedic literature is to awaken this God consciousness in the forgetful living being, and this same purpose is presented in various ways in the different scriptures of the world for the understanding of a foolish mankind. Thus the ultimate purpose of all religions is to bring one back to Godhead. But the Veda Vadarata people, instead of realizing that the purpose of the Vedas is to revive the forgetful soul's lost relationship with personality of Godhead, take it for granted that such side issues as the attainment of heavenly pleasure for sense gratification, the lust for which causes their material bondage is the first place, are the ultimate end of the Vedas. Such people misguide others by misinterpreting the Vedic literature. Sometimes they even condemn the Puranas, which are authentic Vedic explanations for laymen. I think that this he speaks about Arya Samaj. They only accept the Vedas. The Veda Vadaratas give their own explanations of the Vedas, neglecting the authority of great teachers, acharyas. They also tend to rise some unscrupulous person from among themselves and present him as the leading exponent of Vedic knowledge. Such Veda Vadaratas are especially condemned in this mantra by the very appropriate Sanskrit words Vidyayamrata. Vidyayam refers to the study of the Vedas because the Vedas are the origin of all knowledge, Vidya, and Rata means those engaged. Vidyayamrata thus means those engaged in the study of the Vedas. The so-called students of the Vedas are condemned herein because they are ignorant of the actual purpose of the Vedas on account of their disobeying the acharyas. Such Veda Vadaratas search out meanings in every word of the Vedas to suit their own purposes. They do not know that the Vedic literature is a collection of extraordinary books that can be understood only through the chain of disciplic succession. One must approach a bona fide spiritual master in order to understand the transcendental message of the Vedas. This is the direction of the Mundaka Upanishad. These Veda Vadarata people, however, have their own acharyas who are not in the chain of transcendental succession. Thus they progressed into the darkest region of ignorance by misinterpreting the Vedic literature. They fall even farther into ignorance than those who have no knowledge of the Vedas at all. The Maya Yapahrita Jnana class of men are self-made gods. Such men think that they themselves are God and that there is no need of worshipping any other god. They will agree to worship an ordinary man if he happens to be rich, but they will never worship the personality of Godhead. Such men, unable to recognize their own foolishness, never consider how is it that God can be entrapped by Maya, his own illusory energy. If God were ever entrapped by Maya, Maya would be more powerful than God. Such men say that God is all-powerful, but they do not consider that if he is all-powerful, there is no possibility of him being overpowered by Maya. These self-made gods cannot answer all these questions very clearly. They are simply satisfied to have become God themselves.
Yes, thank you very much, Guru. Okay. So, I think that's the end now at 9:04. If there are no questions or comments, further questions or comments, we can end. Looks like we had a few people come and go. I don't know who they are. Dirky, Indu. Okay, anyone would like to say anything before we end?
The God who suffers and is in illusion is still a God because his suffering is only a lila.
Yes, it's a very foolish philosophy, Mayavada. Prabhupada puts the very simple point. If Mayavada philosophy is correct, then Maya is superior to God because God can become covered by illusion. If illusion can dominate over God, then which is more powerful? And God cannot both be the most powerful and capable of being illusioned. So just on this simple argument, Maya Parita Jnana, we say their intelligence has been stolen. And their intelligence is stolen by illusions. They can't be intelligent, properly intelligent, and remain Mayavada. Well, Mayavada means his intelligence is not proper. Rather than proper intelligence to understand. One time he's saying God is the supreme. Another saying Maya is covering him.
This understanding of illusory energy, the three modes of material nature, like the laws of the universe, it is very unique to the Vedic scriptures. And I'm sometimes wondering how to explain this three laws of material nature in scientific terms. What is that what makes a person illusioned? How to convert, or how to explain that in scientific terms, what's happening that somebody becomes illusioned? What is that mode of sattva, rajas and tamas? What would be that in scientific understanding?
By a finite position, by a finite condition, he can become illusion because he has finite power, finite as discernment, you could say, finite ability to discern things. Basically, he just becomes confused. It's possible. If you put a living entity within so much stimulation, so many different ideas coming, he can become confused. We're not so powerful. Living entity is very simple, and meant to live a very simple life of God consciousness. Yet when you provide so many stimulations, so many different ideas, he can easily become bewildered by that. Anyone, even a very brilliant scientist, under some extreme conditions, psychological extremes. Extremes in Russia, they would do that. But then even great scientists under a lot of pressure, and they would lose their intelligence. So this is the nature of the living entity, to be conditionable, be influenced by his environment, and lose track of what is the right thing, what is the proper focus. That's all. It is within our nature as finite beings to be so conditionable. We aren't supreme, that's for sure. Some situation will always be there by which we can be diverted. Only one who has received the mercy of the Lord, only from the higher platform, coming down to the lower, can we be free from that fear of being diverted by other things, not by the strength of our concentration or focus, even by our faith. The only thing that will save us is the mercy of the Lord. If we have that, then no problem. If we don't have that, then we must face so many difficulties, no doubt. So somehow or other, to get the mercy of the Lord and his devotee is the only hope we have of becoming free from the influences of the material modes of nature. One who has the mercy of the devotee and follows and can satisfy the devotee, serve the interests of the devotee, serve the interests of his master, and has his mercy, has his grace, then he alone is safe from the influences of material nature. No other way. Jai Gurudev. All right, I think we'll end now. Everyone likes to say, like to say Hare Krishna. You can just type here or turn on your mics and broadcast to the world. Hare Krishna.